My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. Welcome to the program. My name is Paul Harvey and this is Life, Passion and Business. My guest on today's show is Susie Beaumont. Her vision is about change and making a difference in the world, and we are kindred spirits in that one, and we had a great laugh throughout the interview. Before we go there, I need to touch on the subject of the moment for me, and that is my running. I mentioned last week I'd entered into the Loch Ness 10K road race, and I didn't know really why I was doing it. But I do now. I'm competing against myself. Entering the race has brought up a new level of commitment. The plan is to run this race under 1 hour. Now, my regular time is around 1 hour, 3 minutes or so. But I would like to get closer to 55 minutes. But success for me will be anything under 60 minutes. So I've got a training plan and there are about 10 days to go. What has been interesting is how the action of actually taking action, putting myself down for this race, has made me change my attitude towards it. I will keep you posted. In other news, I said I had some interesting and exciting interviews lined up. Well, I had a lovely conversation with Delora Guignon. She is a mind sex mentor. I'm going to leave that there, and we'll talk about that next week. You might want to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss it. So if you're on your app, tap the follow button. Go on, do it now. Follow, subscribe, brilliant. So on with the show. My guest on the program is committed to changing lives by changing your world. Susie Beaumont is a former BBC producer with 18 years of experience working both radio and television. She has a track record of creating nationally recognised features and live programming and specialises in making business, health and wellbeing and lifestyle documentaries. But while her life on the outside looked good, the inside was a different story. So the current story is a culmination of a 10-year journey, and it all started with the making of a program about life coaching. Susie had no idea of the impact that a chance meeting with a life coach would have on her, or how that meeting would go on to transform every aspect of her life. In our conversation, she candidly admits that without that meeting, she would no longer be here. We would not be talking. It was coaching and personal development that got her through the toughest parts of her life, dealing with family illness, loss, and personal relationship breakdowns, and more. Having come through the journey, she is committed to sharing the possibility of change. So in 2016, she had the idea to create an event to bring together some of the best speakers and thinkers in the personal development world. In April 2017, the event, now called Change Your World, was an outstanding success. It was followed again in 2018 with the Change Your World follow-up that was equally successful. These were the first events of their kind to be put on in the Highlands of Scotland. We joined the conversation with Susie just weeks before her next event, Change Your World Glasgow. Susie Beaumont is an introvert, living like an extrovert, and this is her story, bringing her passion and commitment to the world and living life on the other side of fear. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and today I am with Susie Beaumont. Now, Susie is a lady I've met around LinkedIn for a long time. I've seen her journey around LinkedIn, and she has this amazing event that she started in Inverness a couple of years ago. And I'll let her tell you more about that one. But we are all about passion and about integrating passion into life. And I've watched Susie doing this, so I would like to know more about it. So welcome to the program, Susie. Tell me more about it. Tell me, how did you get to this place where you are now?
Well, it's been a long, winding road, as I'm sure it is with many of the guests that you interview. Essentially, it started 10 years ago when I met a life coach. And at the time, I had a great job. I was a radio producer with BBC. I loved my job, was doing really interesting content, winning awards, and very successful in my job. However, the rest of my life, my personal life, wasn't so great. I was in an unhappy relationship. I was overweight. I was in lots of debt. And, you know, essentially to anybody sort of looking in, they would have seen me having a good job, a nice house, car, you know, all the kind of trimmings that we deem successful. And would have just presumed I was happy. But inside, I was just going through the motions, just literally going to work and focusing all my energy on work because that was going well, and just feeling quite empty in the rest of my life. And so I met Alistair, who I was actually making a radio program with. And I was curious to know what a life coach was or did. I had, you know, had no concept. And he just simply sort of explained that, you know, he supports people to reach their true potential. And then bluntly said to me, you could do with some life coaching. Which I was, given that I met him in a professional sense and I was portraying the very professional image and, you know, trying to make out everything was okay, I was like, how very dare you, sort of thing.
Did he say that during the program? Hopefully off air.
No, this was completely off air. This was, you know, the chat after the interview. And yeah, he just, you know, he sort of said that. And, you know, the seed was planted.
The problem is, of course, you've done enough personal development work now. You can spot it a mile off, can't you? You watch someone talking to you and think to yourself, you need help. And it's really hard to button your lip when you can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, I think everybody needs help. I mean, even now, I'm 10 years on and I've absorbed myself in so much personal development and I've changed every aspect of my life. There's still another level. There's still room for me to grow and I'm still growing. I'm just on a different plane now. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that we should all either have a life coach or have a personal development practice. Which way it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, I mean, you see the sports people. They'll have one coach and then they'll move on to the next coach and the next coach and the next coach. It doesn't just stop there. They don't just get a coach, you know, start playing tennis and that's their last coach. They carry on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of my previous guests, the guys from Satori Prime, these guys, you know, they run a multi-million pound business. Their latest coach is costing them $150,000 a year.
Yeah, that's a different. The coaches just get more expensive,
I think. This is a very high level business coach that does personal and business, and it's for the two of them. But that's what they, so yeah, that's what happens. Yeah, it keeps going, as you say. So okay, you met Alistair and he started coaching you, and I guess all sorts of things started popping out the woodwork.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it actually took me 4 months to actually pick up the phone to him to say, can I meet you for a life coaching session? Because I felt embarrassed. I felt such a stigma that I needed life coaching because I would look at my friends and think, well, they all look sorted. And why am I the only one that needs a life coach? Why can't I sort out my stuff on my own, you know? And, you know, I just felt really embarrassed by it.
But you never know what's going on behind the doors, do you?
Absolutely, you absolutely don't. You
behind
really
the closed door, it's like every all the conversations I've had with all the successful people I've had. Well, I say successful in inverted commas. All the people that look like they've got it sorted, yes, is my phrase. You know, they look like they've got it all together. You know, they're all just the same as they're all just as neurotic as the rest of us.
Yeah, everyone's fighting their own demons, whatever it be, and it's on a spectrum. You know, some are like manic and some are crazy demons and the other ones are just, you know, in our own heads, really. But I mean, that was the very much, it literally did take me 4 months to pluck up the courage to pick up the phone. We went for, we met in Starbucks, I remember. And I remember actually saying to him, who should I say you are in case anybody sees us? Because I couldn't work out what was worse, somebody thinking we were having an affair or somebody thinking he was my life coach. That's, you know, that was my frame of mind at the time. And I was like, and he was like, just tell them I'm your life coach. I was like, oh, no way. And I was really embarrassed.
I'd rather think he's my lover than my life coach.
No, you know, it was a fine line between the two. And I was like, oh God, I'm uncomfortable with both of them. But yes, thankfully I saw past that. And, you know, the first session was very uncomfortable because I was asked questions that nobody had ever asked me. And, you know, I mean, even a simple question was, you know, it's like, what do you want? And I remember just asking, saying, I just want to be happy. And he said, well, what's happiness to you? And I was literally like, I have no idea. I don't know what that means to me. And, you know, so any, you know, it's a can of worms with these things, you know, started unpicking where my belief systems came from, my experiences in childhood that had kind of, you know, shaped the way that I thought. And it was painful. And, you know, there was laughter, there was tears, there were just complete, you know, penny dropping moments where it was just
not all in Starbucks, I hope.
Not all in Starbucks, a lot of it in Starbucks, but yeah, it could have been Costa 1 week, Nero Cafe the next, you know.
Tears and pain in Starbucks does not fit well, but there we are.
When it started getting more painful and I was having lots more tears, I was like, can we do this in the comfort of my own home, please? This is like, I'm not into for public crying. So, we did the more personal work, I should say. It's not even personal. It was just painful. The stuff that I was embarrassed about. And you know, and it's crazy now when I think back, because there was actually nothing to be embarrassed about, but it was just that thing of voicing your beliefs out aloud to another person. You know, these inner thoughts that we have. And
I mean, you
think somebody will judge you, you know, and then, you know, and Alice is just sitting there going, why on earth would you be embarrassed by that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a lovely lady I met years ago, who had a terrible time, you know, in sort of moving her life forward and stuff. And when she finally sat down and got it sorted out, she discovered that she had decided that her father died on her birthday when she was like 5 or 6. Oh, and she decided her father wanted to leave her. That's why he died.
Oh,
and her whole life was shifted out because of that one event. Yeah. And once she realised that he actually died, he just died. He didn't choose on that day.
No.
Her life freed up. And she was embarrassed about the whole thing. As you say, the things that we get embarrassed about or that we hide away in the dark corners, they're nothing to be embarrassed about. But we build this demon around them.
Yeah, well, that's it. We make up these stories and we create a story. And sometimes we're not even aware of the story that we've created. You know, something that can seem so insignificant in childhood can have a lasting legacy on the way we operate in the world and our belief systems. And it's like, you know, and it's only when you stop and pause and actually talk to somebody that, you know, has the skills to dig out and really truly listen to what you're saying, that, you know, these things come out and you suddenly think, why on earth? And as soon as you realize that that's what your thinking is and where you're, you know, how it's been shaped, it takes the power out of it, and you can then change it, you know. And you, I mean, it doesn't happen overnight, but as soon as you become aware, that's when the change starts to happen. But, you know, a lot of us, and, you know, there's still things I need to work on that I'm, you know, the awareness isn't there. And, you know, that's why I continue with personal development, because there's still a journey to go, you know, there's still more to discover.
So, okay, you started this journey. So what was the first outcome? Because clearly you were, as you said, you were overweight in a relationship. You probably, I don't know where that was. And you're also, you know, unhappy generally. So what was the first shift for you?
It, absolutely the awareness. So I remember at one point literally walking down the street of Inverness, and I was really becoming super aware of my thoughts, how I was thinking, how I behaved, my conditioning. And I remember, you know, being really challenged by a lot of the things. And I remember, like, looking around at everybody who just seemed blissfully ignorant. And I was like, who's the fool here? You know, like, they're just going about their everyday life and just seems, you know, and here I am unpicking every aspect of myself and trying to figure it out and trying to change it and all the rest of it. And it's causing me a lot of pain at the moment. However, when you work through that and come out the other side of that, you know, it's just this feeling of understanding yourself more, catching yourself when you start behaving a certain way towards a certain person, or reacting badly to a comment, or being triggered by a family member, you know, those kind of things. So my relationships, some started to improve and others started to completely deteriorate, to the point where I realized that I had a lot of toxic people in my life. You know, I had a friendship that had been for 20 years, and I started to see how toxic it was, and how, you know, if we didn't do what she wanted, then, you know, I realized how much of a people pleaser, and how, you know, I just called myself easygoing, but I was like, no, you're an absolute doormat. You know, you're just like doing what everybody else wants to do. And where's Susie's voice? Where's my voice? What do I want? Mm-hmm. And so those were the subtle things that started changing, although they had, you know, big repercussions in a lot of relationships breaking down. Mm-hmm. You know, started absolutely, you know, changing the way I thought. So my limiting beliefs, my negative thinking started to change that. Realized how negative I had become with other people. And so I started taking responsibility for myself, stopped blaming other people and saying, okay, well, if this is not going the way I want it to go, this is actually my responsibility. What can I do to change it? Mm-hmm. What can I do to take control of it? So those were the big, big things. And then that just led on to, you know, more things. Like, so looking at my diet and, you know, and making changes subtly and just sort of working on one thing at a time. However, a year into sort of seeing Alistair and having life coaching, a whole grenade went off in my life. And my mum and sister were both diagnosed with terminal cancer within 4 months of each other.
Wow.
And that was massive. I mean, my sister, she was diagnosed first, and we didn't actually know that it was terminal. We just, she had been told, but she didn't tell us. But, and I just believed my sister's strong. She will fight this. And, you know, she's super healthy. She'll sort this. She'll be able to get through this. My mum, I knew, was a very different story. Absolutely knew that this wasn't going to have a happy ending. She wasn't going to beat it. Unfortunately, you know, she was a smoker. She wasn't willing to change. And she just, you know, this had robbed her of her life. Mm. And the thing was that I'd lost my dad aged 24. He had been diagnosed with cancer also. And, you know, literally we had been given the diagnosis, and he was told he had weeks to live. And he did die 6 weeks later. And I remember at that time, like, my dad, a year previous to him being diagnosed with cancer, he was actually had to go for a heart operation. And he broke down in tears. Now, my dad was a really strong man and very, you know, didn't show his feelings. And a rare moment that we, just me and him together, he broke down in tears and just said, I'm too young to die. I've still got too much to do. And I remember being absolutely crushed by this and thinking, you know, I thought my dad had lived quite a full life and, you know, he was always having adventures and he'd set up his own business and he'd done lots of things. And, you know, he was a man with a story and I always kind of thought he had achieved so much, but yet here he was approaching the end of his life thinking, no, there's still more to do. And I, you know, after losing dad, I remember, you know, when I took working through the grief, I remember thinking, that's not going to be my legacy. I'm not going to take life for granted. I'm going to live life to the full. And I'm absolutely going to grasp it all with both hands. However, flash forward 10, 11 years, and here I am getting hit with the same painful lesson with my mum and sister being diagnosed with cancer. And I'm thinking, how could I have become so complacent again? How could I have let my life spiral out of control again to a place where I'm utterly miserable? And sorry, that was an email commentary. I don't know why that's...
That's fine. That's fine.
So I realised how had I become so complacent again and come to a place that I was so unhappy and letting life spiral out of control again or spiral out down a route that wasn't bringing me joy. So that was a massive turning point, as you can imagine. And, you know, there's a lot of practical stuff that had to be dealt with and, you know, it kind of, my needs sort of became a bit kind of secondary because it meant that I then had to, you know, care for my mum and, you know, there's a lot to deal with there. But the other part of my story is that my sister Shelley is an adult with learning disabilities. She's a year older than me. We've always been close. And I always knew that I would look after Shelley when my parents passed away. However, I thought it would be later in life. I thought I would be married with my own kids and own family and, you know, just imagine Shelley would just slot into family life and I would have all my siblings around me. You know, I've got a brother as well. And just imagine that I would have that support network around me. However, that was not to be the case because... my sister passed away as well, and my brother, I mean, we hadn't had the best of relationships, but that completely deteriorated after the death of my mum and sister. And, you know, so all of a sudden it was me and Shelley, and I was bringing her up on her own, on my own, and caring for her on my own, and suddenly making all these decisions about Shelley's life that I had, you know, I couldn't barely make decisions about my own life and let alone to be suddenly responsible for my sister. And, you know, my dad had never discussed what would happen to Shelley. They always knew that I would look after her. They never expected it. However, I know they hoped it would happen because that was a big concern for them and a big worry about what would happen to Shelley after they passed away. But we never did actually sit down and say, well, what do you want for Shelley? How do you want her life to turn out? And, you know, where would you like her to live? You know, do we have money for her? Is there a funding for, you know, is there, you know, a nest egg for her or anything like that? None of that was discussed. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm challenged with all, not only, you know, several losses, because I split up in amongst all this as well. I split up with my partner, which meant selling the house and moving. And, you know, so it was just a succession of loss after loss after loss. And everything that had been stable in my life suddenly had just been thrown up and nothing was stable. I mean, even my job that I was, you know, really good at and loved. Just I couldn't cope anymore. I was signed off with stress and, you know, and I just felt like a huge failure at that. I was like, I can't even do my job anymore, you know. It's just, and yeah, that when something like that happens, it makes you really look at your life and go, what the hell is going on here?
There is only so much a human can deal with at one time.
Thankfully
we do have systems to appreciate that, because you can't deal with loss of family and partners and moving house. I mean, you know, moving house is stressful enough, you know, all those things simultaneously, and trying to hold a job down.
Well, they say the three top stressors are bereavement, divorce, and moving house. It's like,
I think babies are in there somewhere.
I would put them right at the top. So, yeah, I mean, and well, essentially, you know, that was everything thrown at me, because I became a mum overnight as well, I suppose, to a toddler that essentially, okay, a toddler in an adult's body, but would never, ever grow up. I mean, I think, you know, parents get through it knowing it won't always be those endless sleepless nights and, you know, endlessly caring that they will grow up and be independent. So, but, you know, that wasn't the case with Shelley, that, you know, I knew, well, this is it, you know, she's always going to need cared for. And, you know, it was an exhausting thought, and I didn't allow myself to go there, because when I did, I knew I didn't have the strength in me. So
wow, that's an amazing story for that point. So what, obviously we've got to the low point, or would you, or is there is there more to go?
Well, I mean, you know, the absolute lowest point is, you know, I did become completely overwhelmed by it all.
I am not surprised.
You know, I woke up one morning and I mean, this was the thing, like people had said to me about feeling, you know, with grief, they feel physical pain in the heart. And I would never allow myself to stop and feel, because, you know, there was a lot to do. I was fighting with social services to get a care package in place for Shelley and, you know, sorting out, just adjusting to everything. And I just kept myself busy. And I just hit a point where I was like, oh, my God, I'm exhausted. I can't do this anymore. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that when you die, you go to this beautiful place. It's filled with unconditional love. You know, it's just lovely. And there is life after life, or life after death, whichever way you want to frame it. And I just thought, why am I hanging around for all, struggling with all this and dealing with all this, when I could just check out and just end this? And, you know, although it was a serious thought, Shelley being, knowing that I had to be here for Shelley kept me going. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't had Shelley, I don't know, would it have spiraled even more? I don't know. But it was a big wake-up call for me, because I just thought, wow, when did I start feeling this way? And when did my feelings get so negative again? Because, you know, my nickname is Susie Sunshine. You know, I'm usually glass half full, I'm upbeat. And despite all the challenges I was having, you know, I would still find a way to find humour. And, you know, when something just got so bad, I would just be like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And interestingly, it was Alistair and his words. I mean, I actually never had said how I was feeling to him, but I saw
Were you still with him? Were you still seeing Alistair at this time?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was seeing Alistair as regularly as I could, because that was the key to what was keeping me going. His way of dealing with me and the advice and coaching that he was giving me. So it wasn't a case of just me offloading. He was actually giving me tools and techniques to just deal with what I was dealing with and find a way, and knowing that it wasn't always going to be like that. And I mean, and this is the thing, you know, Alistair knows me very well, and he knows when to be really kind to me. He knows when he needs to just listen, but he also knows when he can be sarcastic and, you know, kind of throw it back at me to kind of stop me having my own little pity party, which, you know, people would say, well, you're entitled to have your pity party, but it, you know, only for a finite time. It doesn't get you anywhere. But he had said to me, you know, a couple of days later after having those thoughts, and I hadn't confessed anything, I hadn't said anything to him, But he just said to me, he said, you know what? He says, no, remember this. He says, no matter how bad it gets, just remember it can always get worse. I was like, are you kidding me? And I remember thinking, am I paying you for this? Like, seriously, this is the advice you're giving me? But it actually, in that moment, because I really was just, you know, so like, you know, shoulders low, feeling really, really sorry for myself. And I just burst out laughing. And that was another turning point, because I remember thinking, do you know what? You're absolutely right.
Well, I mean, it's the point, isn't it?
Things are bad right now, but it could be a whole lot worse.
Well, I mean, that's the point. I mean, I know it feels shit when you're dealing with it. And I agree, you were dealing with some tough shit, but you do live in the first world. You know, there is food to buy in the shops. There is solutions to every problem you can possibly have if you've got enough money to pay for them. But there is always a solution here.
Absolutely.
Go and try to sit in a war zone. Now try and deal with this problem.
Exactly. And that's it. And, you know, it was the wake up call I needed. Let me focus on what is going well in my life rather than, you know, all the shit, like you say. And I mean, that wasn't to be dismissive of that, because I think it's important to, you know, work through the emotions and the feelings and the grief that I was dealing with. However, it was like, you know, if you're going through hell, keep going, don't stay there, you know.
It's about perspective, isn't it?
Moving forward.
It's about perspective. So, okay, clearly you rose out of this place and you did other things.
Yeah.
So how did your upward trajectory start?
Lots of different things, just trying lots of different, absorbing myself in, you know, self-help books, going on workshops, conferences, speaking to people, I went traveling, I took some time out. So me and Shelley went off to Cambodia, Thailand and Vietnam. You know, I was just like, I just need to get away from this. And like you say, perspective, like just having a change of scenery, physically having a change of scenery, just suddenly lifted lots of my problems. It was just like, I don't need to face that. I don't need to deal with it. So, you know, I went traveling, I took time out, I went volunteering, just tried so many different things and just things to bring joy back into my life. Because I was just like, okay, I've had a lot of loss. What am I about? You know, like, you know, everything. It was almost like I had a blank canvas and thinking, okay, well, what am I about? What do I stand for? How do I think? What do I want from my life? And where do I want to take it? So it was literally just going out, trying new things, finding out who I'm about, what I'm about, and absolutely what brings me joy. So, yeah, I went off and had lots of madcap experiences, and it was good fun. So you came back.
Something brought you back to Inverness. Then you came back to this area and settled down after your travels and did what?
Well, the travels were kind of ongoing, so I would take 6 weeks out here and then, you know, go off on another sort of 3 week sort of thing. And so they were over sort of the space of 3-4 years. And of course, you know, I was coming back, I still had my day job. I was back building that up, but everything had changed from that point. You know, even I just kind of felt like I'd had all these experiences, and I would just sit at my desk and think, can't have gone through everything I've gone through just to sit back at this desk and just keep churning out the same stuff, you know. And my life needed more meaning and more purpose. And, you know, and I was trying to sort of, I was implementing that into my program making, you know. And by this point, I was so passionate about personal development because of, you know, the changes that I was making and, you know, how it helped me through all these difficult times. And I was introducing that into my program making, and I was getting more and more inspired by the people that I spoke to. I mean, I met some incredible people along the way, and I think, God, I've had adversity. I want to hear the stories of these people, you know. It kept inspiring me. So, you know, I was searching for something. I knew I wanted to do something different. I didn't know what that was, and I tried lots of different things. I came up with all these kind of madcap business ideas and, you know, things. I was like, yeah, this is it. This is my passion. And then, you know, I'd be like, no, actually, this is not doing it for me. And I read this, it was either an article or a book, and it said, you know, if you're trying to work out your passion for life, what you want to do, write a list of all your skills and what you're good at, and write a list of what you're passionate about, what brings you joy, what you like to do, and then try and combine the lists. So I did this and, you know, sat with this for, you know, like a year. I mean, it didn't happen overnight. And then just a chance conversation, a friend of mine had said, he was starting a podcast, and he said, Susie, I'm looking for interesting guests. Do you know anybody? And I said, yeah, I know loads. I mean, I've 18 years career in the BBC, you know, I've come across a lot of interesting people in my time. So I started phoning around some of them, and they had said, you know, they were like, oh, agreed to do the podcast. But I was catching up with them and finding out what they were doing. And literally, I thought, wow, I know a load of people that are doing amazing things, and they're all trying to make a difference in the world. And at that time, I was reading about collaboration, the Mastermind Alliance, and, you know, what happens when you collaborate and you bring people together, what you can create. And I thought, I wonder what would happen if I could get these people in a room together. What could we create? Mm-hmm. And literally, out of nowhere, this idea, I mean, I don't know if it was divine guidance, I don't know, but it was just hit me. And I was like, I know, I'll put on a personal development conference or a health and wellbeing conference, literally a motivational conference. I will bring these people together, put them on the stage, and set up a conference. Because I figured it was the same skills that apply to putting on a radio program. It's just a different stage, a different format.
Yes.
So that side of it. And then the other side of it, my passion, which is all about helping people, personal development, you know, making a difference in the world. That's a big thing for me. I really, really do want to make a positive difference in the world. And traveling is my other passion. Haven't quite managed to get that into the mix yet, but we're on it. We're working on it.
Well, that means but this is in other countries, yeah. Isn't it? We need to do an event in Barcelona. Yeah. An event in Barcelona sounds like a good place.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the vision. It's in the game plan. But this was the seed of the idea. And I thought, okay. And, you know, then I started going, right, well, where am I going to put it? And I was thinking Glasgow, Edinburgh, you know, the big cities. And then I was like, do you know what? No. I'm going to do it here on my doorstep because, you know, for a number of reasons. One, we never have anything like this up here in the Highlands. We always have to travel. Two, we've got one of the highest rates of suicides. I don't know what the latest figures were, but in male suicide in the Highlands, at one point, we had the highest rate in the UK. It's not the case now, but that was. And I thought, you know, there's a need for this up here, you know, there's a disconnect, and I'm going to do it here. And so many people told me it would not work. You would not get people interested. You won't get enough people. And I was like, no, build it and they will come. So, yeah, so April 2017, I put on my first Change Your World conference. And, I mean, this is the thing. When I started the seed of this idea, I literally phoned around a handful of people, you know, people that had inspired me. And I said, okay, I've got the seed of an idea. I want to put on this conference. I don't have a name for it yet. I don't have a team. I don't have any money. I can't pay you. But will you be part of it? And to my absolute delight or horror, I don't know, they said yes. To my amazement more than anything, they said, yes, Susie, love to be part of it. And so I knew as soon as I had my speakers, I was like, okay, I've got a conference. Now I just need to do the rest of the stuff. And that was the challenge. That was the hard stuff. So, and, you know, still continues to be. So, but yeah, so the first conference happened in April 2017. We had nearly 200 people there, 20 exhibitors, all with services to help people make positive changes in their lives. And, you know, the feedback was incredible. Just had an amazing day. So, yeah, it was fantastic. So that's how Change Your World was born and where I am
today.
So
that was your first conference in 2017. And then you had didn't you have a second one this year as well?
I did, yes. So I literally, I put that conference on with no real game plan. That was only my game plan. Like, I was going to do a conference and I hadn't thought beyond that, even though people kept saying, what are you doing next? And I was like, I'm doing this alongside my day job. This is as much as I can do right now, or even headspace to think. So after the conference, everyone kept saying, when are you doing the next one? And literally at the time, I felt like I'd just given birth and I was being told I was pregnant with twins. It's just like, you have got to be kidding me. I cannot do another one. But at the same time, I really wanted to. I knew I had something special. And I knew I had created something really, really good. So, so I started planning the next one again alongside the day job. And I ran it again April 2018. And then that one, again, another great success. And that's when I decided, okay, it's time to take the plunge and leave my day job, my very secure day job, and a job that I still loved. And but it was time to take the plunge and leave the job. And I'm now taking Change Your World on tour, and we're taking it to Glasgow next month.
Well, the point. You can't. Yeah, you can only grow so far within the confines that you've got. Yes. So at some point, you have to burn the bridge.
Yes, absolutely.
The bridge has been burned, and the October events sounds like it'd be fantastic. So obviously, we're going to put full details of the October event in the podcast details. So I won't go into it here. But let's stick back to you. So that's the journey. We now know the journey you're on. So so passion. You've spoken a lot about passion in this conversation. What is passion for you? What is your passion? And how, I mean, clearly you lost it and you got it back. So can you say a little bit more about that?
So, passion for me, I mean, it changes. It changes as I evolve. But I mean, essentially, underlying it is what makes me get out of bed, what makes my heart sing, what brings me joy. I mean, definitely helping others, making a difference in the world. But it's when, you know, I get that feedback from somebody that said, when you said that your conference changed my life, or I've changed this as a result of something you said, or one of my speakers said, that just, I cannot tell you how much that lights me up, because you know, for me, it's all about the ripple effect. And, you know, this is what Change Your World is all about. You know, when I talk about why I call it Change Your World, it's, you know, just talking about initially, it's your immediate world and, you know, the repercussions of our actions. So every action has a positive or an action. So if we take a positive choice, the idea is you'll get positive results. If you take a negative choice, you'll get negative results. So the encouragement is to, you know, become mindful, become aware, and choose positively. And then that starts to change your immediate world. And if every single one of us does that, that changes the world in the process. So, I mean, it's a simple, you literally can change the world through personal development just by changing yourself. And, you know, I think we often can have this notion that, well, what can I do? You know, I don't have, it's just me. I can't make a difference. And it's like, I just want to impress upon people how much power you have as an individual to make a difference in the world. And the way I describe this is, so for example, somebody might have, a 5 minute drive, 5-10 minute drive to work. And if they decide, actually, I'm going to make this small change, I'm going to get up 20 minutes earlier and I'm going to walk to work. So first of all, not only are they walking to work, so that's improving their physical health, but also their mental health. So then they go into the workplace, they feel much happier and healthier, they're more productive in the workplace. So that improves the working environment. Because they've been walking to work, and they're proving their physical health and their mental health, then that has a knock-on effect that they're probably one less person that's going to need the services of the NHS. So that's one less stressed-out nurse or doctor that has to deal with another ill patient, you know, so it's one less person to deal with. So that changes that area. If you're focusing on, you know, if you're walking to work, you then you're healthier and happier, then that has an impact on you being your family life. You know, you're there. Not only are you happier when you come home because you've shaken off the day and the stresses of work, you know, by the time you've walked home, you're happier to be around for your family, but you're also going to be around longer. I mean, I'm somebody that lost my family young. You know, surely parents want to be there for the kids, but you're also being a role model to your kids. You're bringing up the next generation and you're inspiring them and showing them a different way. And that's probably the most important job that we can have as human beings. And that small change has massive, massive ripple effects. And that's what I try to impress upon people, that, you know, it doesn't have to be huge, big acts to make a difference in the world. Your tiny little daily actions create all the tomorrows that we have. So that is what Change Your World is all about. And that's why I'm so passionate, because, you know, it really is small changes that can make such a difference. And that's passion for me.
Yeah, and I can hear that.
Well, it's what gets me out of bed, you know, and trust me, setting up a business is challenging. I mean, I have been so challenged in the last 2 years with all these new things that I'm having to learn and I don't have a clue about. And I'm like, oh, some days I'm like, oh, I can't do this. I'm just so over this. And then I remember why I started, why I'm doing it. I just, you know, at the moment, I just don't know how I'm doing it. I know my why, and that is because it's so massive, that keeps me going. That's what makes me passionate.
So you've already answered this question, sort of, but I guess, mm-hmm. and I think you've answered anyway, but I will ask it because for my continuity. So what is success to you? Because obviously the problem with the world is we're sold this model of success, and sadly our governments are still following the model of success. The model of success is growth, endless growth, you know. You will study mm-hmm. hard and you'll do well and you'll get a good yeah. job and you'll earn money and you'll buy a car. I'm sure you don't. But, you know, we've got this model in the world where we define success. And it's like, what's success for you? And I'm sure I know the answer, but I have to ask the question.
Well, success for me, I mean, if you'd asked me this maybe 6 months ago, I would have given you, in fact, a year ago, I would have given you a very different answer. And success for me is, I remember reading this quote and it said, life is a test and you only pass it when you're true to yourself.
Ooh, that's nice.
And that is lovely, ooh, isn't it? And I, you know, it just changed my whole ethos. I thought, to me, that is what success is about, being true to me, because when I am true to me, I show up and I am the best I can be for everybody else and the world. And, you know, learning to know what I'm about, what I stand for, you know, looking at how I've been conditioned by my parents, by society, by my friends, by the experiences, and stripping it back and going, well, is that true for me? Do I believe that? Is that in keeping with my core values? And, you know, and really working out what my core values are and knowing that if I'm being true to them, then I will be happy and healthy and living life with passion, because that's what it's when we go against our values and we go against what's right for us. And this is not about being selfish. It's about working out what your values are. Like, I will give you an example. So in fact, I can give you numbers of examples. So I've given up alcohol recently. I decided to do the 1 year no beer challenge. And this is to give up alcohol 365 days.
I know Rory.
Oh, you know, yeah. Rory. Oh, right. Well, I was completely inspired by Rory. They spoke at my last conference, Rory and Andy, and I was completely inspired by them. I mean, my relationship with alcohol had been changing quite a bit, but, you know, I'm all about health and happiness. And I thought, okay, here I am not every weekend, but like when I go out and have a drink, this has a knock-on effect for me. Like for the next week, it brings me down, it makes me anxious, it makes me doubt myself, it makes me doubt my business. It demotivates me. I cannot handle the headaches and the hangovers. And I thought, why am I doing this? And that is, again, it's because we're conditioned by society that, you know, you go out on a night out, you drink, you celebrate, you drink, you drown your sorrows with drink and all these kind of. And I just thought, is this right for me? Is it serving me? And I was like, no. And that, as soon as I kind of made that connection, and it was the same with, I went vegan 2.5 years ago. And I'm somebody that, I grew up on a dairy farm, you know, literally on a farm until I was my late teens, until my 20s, until I moved home, I moved out and moved up to Inverness. And, you know, there was always a disconnect. I'm a massive animal lover. And, you know, this one experience was probably the start of it. But because I was so conditioned that that's what you did and that's just what it is. So, you know, when I was sort of 12, 13, we, you know, we had lambs, and every lambing season there was often lambs that were orphaned, and we had to bottle feed and what have you. And I had these two lambs. And they were called Razzers and Rocky Hornhead with their names. And they were like, you know, I would come off the school bus, I would walk down the schoolyard, and they would run up to me and greet me like dogs, you know, lie down, have their belly rubbed. I adored them. I was, you know, loved them to pieces. And I came home one day and there was no sign of them. And I said to Mum, I says, Where's Razzers and Rocky Hornhead? And she's, they've gone to market, which meant they'd gone to slaughter. And I was like, I was speechless.
We're eating the dog.
Yeah, exactly. And that was it. I mean, I never ate lamb again after that. So I made the connection, joined the dots up with the lamb, but, you know, still kept eating beef, kept drinking, you know, eating other meat, chicken, fish, all the rest of it. And I just... Yeah. You know, I remember at that point being just feeling really betrayed by my family, but also felt like I'd betrayed these animals that, you know, had bonded with me and trusted me, that, you know, and built up this relationship. And then, you know, flash forward sort of 20 years, because I believed that, you know, well, that's just what you do. We eat animals. And I'm thinking, well, why is it that I eat a cow and a pig and a sheep, but I take a cat and a dog into my home and I love them and I treat them differently? Yeah. You know, why am I appalled by China and the Yulin Dog Festival? Yeah. And, you know, when I was traveling in Vietnam, you know, we went into this homestay and they had these kittens, and I was, you know, cuddling the kittens, and they were completely bemused as to why I was bonding with these kittens, because to them, these cats were just lunch. You know, as soon as there was a drought on and there was no rice to eat, these cats were going to be eaten, you know? And I was like, completely against my core values, and, you know, lots of different steps leading up to that point. You know, seeing a slaughterhouse on Facebook, blah blah blah, and eventually.
So it sounds like I joined. Success to you is about sitting with your core values.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, and my core values will be very different to your core values, and, you know, Joe Bloggs' core values. But it's, we never sit down and go, well, what am I about?
I find that really hard. I've done the value exercise, and I find it really hard to narrow them down. I think they say you shouldn't have any more than like five to ten or something, somewhere between 5 and 10. And I find it really hard to narrow them down. But I'm not gonna open that box now, because I think we could be talking for a long time if we start opening my value conversation.
Well, I think the key for me is when somebody says something and it triggers me and I feel defensive, I know it's hit something, it's hit a nerve, and that makes me go, okay, I need to look at that. What's that about? Mm-hmm. And just work with it. You know, be kind to yourself. Don't criticize or be critical. It's just, you know, we'll work through and say, well, why am I having that reaction? You know, what's off balance here? So that's how I look at it now. And yeah. But that's where I am. But yeah, we could talk.
I want to pull the threads in now because we're getting to that time when I have to pull the threads in. Otherwise, I end up talking to my guests forever, which is very possible because I can do that sort of thing. But I think we need to pull the threads in. So I always ask this question at this point of the interview, and the reason I ask this question is because I don't want you to walk away from this and go, "Oh, bugger, I wish I'd said this." So. What is it?
I will do.
If there was something that I should have asked you that I didn't, what would it be?
Oh, gosh, I wish you'd prepared me for this one. I guess it's, if I had not had personal development, if I had not had a life coach, where would I be now? What would my life look like now if I didn't have all these? So do you want me to answer?
If you want to, if that's the question I should have asked you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, essentially, I probably would have been probably even more overweight, unhappy, in debt, just possibly not even here.
Well,
today.
You did mention that thing, and possibly you probably would have left.
Yes, I think I probably, possibly, although I do know that I am quite a gutsy lady and I am solution focused. So I'm like, you know, I do believe there's a will, there's a way, you know. However, I do believe that, you know, without this right role model support networks, this is what happens to individuals, and you know why we don't make these changes, because we don't have anybody. There's two things that I say will force us to change, and it's inspiration or desperation. You know, it's however painful life gets that you will eventually make a change. However, I look at my mum, and you know, she chose not to change. She would rather die than give up smoking, and you know, that's essentially where I could have been. I mean, not that I was a smoker, but I could have just been, I could have reached the end of my life, not living life to the full and getting to the point of just thinking, wow, I have so many missed opportunities. Mm. I didn't take, and just living life with regret. And, you know, I vowed that when I learned that painful lesson, that was not going to be my legacy. And you know, I mean, even now I look at my life and thinking, do you know what? Even if I were, I mean, touch wood, I'm touching wood. Even if I was, you know, to be hit with the curveball that you know my life is going to at the end, I'd be like, do you know what? I've packed an awful lot in, so, but I've still got an awful lot still to pack in. So
well, we are the lucky generation. We are the lucky generation. I look at my son's opportunity, you know. He's going to have some challenges ahead of him. But I think we were the lucky generation that we brought up in a world that was relatively free. It was before the internet, which I think in some ways was actually quite a bonus, being before the internet in some ways.
Yeah, definitely.
And our parents
wonder how we managed.
Well, indeed, but we did.
And
our parents, your mum didn't give up smoking, but she didn't really have the tools to even know where to start that.
No.
Because
having the role model.
But personal development wasn't there for her, was it? I mean, you know.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, and that's the thing.
I mean, I feel sorry for my son in some respects, because he comes home with a, and I'm going to go, right, let me hear you express that, or do you want a solution? What do you want me to do at this point? I mean, I can listen to you, but only for so long. And at some point, you have to deal with this. And it's like, that's not what I want. I just want you.
I just want to listen to you to let me vent and not try and find a solution. But that's what you end up doing.
I don't find a solution for him, but I encourage him to find a solution. I won't let him vent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
I'm a coach. Yeah. I learned to coach too. And it's like, you know, well, you can have my dad, and you can have coach. Now, which bit do you want?
Exactly. You're like, neither. I don't want any. Just leave it.
And we get that one sometimes as well. So, Susie, thank you so much for your time today, talking to me today. It has been a genuine pleasure to talk to you for the time we've had together.
Thank you.
So, obviously, This is the point where we say, how can people get in touch with you? Tell me about the October event. What? Give me your basic stuff. Obviously, all of the bits and pieces will be on the website so that people can find it. But what would you say about what's happening in October?
Well, we've got an incredible lineup of speakers. So we've got 8 speakers, all from different sort of backgrounds. We've got Dr. Mark Williamson from Action for Happiness. He's going to be delivering 10 keys to happier living. We've got Dr. David Hamilton talking about the 5 side effects of kindness. We've got Abigail Arbanel. She's a psychotherapist talking about the neuroscience of relationships and how to have more harmonious relationships and realizing why we're triggered by certain people. Uh-huh. Got Jenny Campbell talking about she's from the Resilience Engine, so she's talking about how we need resilience to change. And we've got Paula Maguire talking about her incredible story about Paula must try harder, and this is her overcoming her social, debilitating social anxiety. And we've got Professor Nanette Mutri talking about how to overhaul our sedentary lifestyles and how they're having a sedentary sitting at a desk is having a very negative impact on our health, but how we can easily turn that around. And Dr. Alan Desmond talking about he's the gut clinic. What's he called? Devon Gut Doctor. So he's talking about gut health and how we can improve our gut health. And we'll have up to 20 exhibitors as well, and they'll all have services. So everything from coaching, business coaching, finance coaching, fitness, nutrition, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to change, you can tap into those services. And, you know, again, create the ripple effect from the day, because we've all been at conferences and workshops and been completely inspired and going, right, that's it, I'm going to do this, and then go back to work on Monday morning. And
so that's the difference. That's the difference to your event. It makes people, it gives you the tools to actually achieve something at the end of it.
Absolutely. It gives you the support network, the accountability, and it gives you a game plan so that you're not just trying to do it on your own. There's support and there's help there to make it happen. So, and you know, lunch is thrown in, you know, we've got networking, book signings, meet the speakers. I mean, it's just an incredible day. And just, yeah, come along if you're curious, come along, see what it's all about. And if, you know, if you're sitting there thinking I need to make changes in my life but don't know how to do it, then give this a try.
So it's called Change Your World,
and it's on the 5th of October at the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall.
And the website is
changeyourworld.me, and we have buy one ticket get second half price promotion at the moment, so, and tickets are selling fast. So get in quick, procrastination will cost you more.
That's the key. I've done this slightly different today because I wanted to end differently. So my final question to all my guests, which is the big question, you see. Now, you've covered this journey. We've covered this journey for you, you know, of your life. So for you, at this time in your life, what is the meaning of life?
What is the meaning of life?
See, what's it for? Because it's like, you know, we get out of bed, we do things, we do this, but it's like, why?
Well, I've got so many answers to that. That's opening a whole can of worms into a whole nother discussion. But I mean, it's like what I said before. I do believe it's about being true to yourself. You know, the human experience is about living life and being true and, you know, working, forgiving yourself for whatever it is you're beating yourself up about, being kind to yourself, learning to truly accept yourself, learning to truly love yourself. And I think, you know, that's what this human experience is all about, because, you know, well, whatever belief system you come from, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not to any particular religion, but I am spiritual. And I do believe that when we leave this physical earth, we go to somewhere where energy, and we return back to this place of unconditional love. And that is what we're supposed to be learning on this physical platform here we call Earth. And it's really just truly learning to love yourself and accept yourself and having unconditional love for yourself. You know, learn to love the warts and all, the, you know, the failings, the successes, celebrate the good stuff and the bad stuff, because it's all a learning experience. You know, it's not failure, it's just learning. It's just learning and growing. So I think that's what the meaning for life is. And, you know, essentially, if you we don't get to that place where we learn that, I think we come back again and we do it all over again until we do learn it. So, and I think, you know, we have many, many lifetimes. I think, you know, and I, for me, that's why some people seem to have a truly, truly horrendous experience in life, and others seem to seem blessed. And I just think it's, you know, we're all having a different journey at a different time and a different experience. Mm. So, and we will all go through every single life lesson there is to go through until we have experienced it, learned from it, and grown from it.
So, Susie, and thank you so much for your time. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. It's been, I've loved this. It's been a great conversation.
And I think we will talk again sometime, because I think there's more to discover. All the best.
Definitely, definitely. All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Susie Beaumont. So if you have any interest in the October event, Change Your World, please check it out on the podcast. You find the links there. You could Google it. It's Change Your World Glasgow, and it'll be the first on the list. It promises to be an outstanding event, and I urge you to get your tickets and go. If you'd like to contact Susie directly and any other things, all of her contact will be on the website, so you can find those details underneath the podcast there. And while we're talking about the podcast website and the podcast, subscribe, help us out here, because we are getting hundreds of downloads every week from people that are listening to the show, and it would be great if we could get some more subscribers and likes and shares, because all those things help us take this message to a wider audience. Anyway, it only remains me to say thank you for listening, and I hope to catch you later.